Hello, it's Scott Manley here. About a week ago, there was a story about how astronauts had been ordered to take refuge in the Dragon spacecraft as the cosmonauts on the Russian side of the station were attempting a sensitive repair to address leaks. Now, the leaks have been an ongoing story on the space station for the last 5 or 6 years or so, but this repair was apparently considered far more sensitive, dangerous, or risky. And I began looking into what had exactly been going on. What were the nature of the leaks? What was the nature of the repair? And frankly, for a long time, I figured these are smart people. They've got it. It's not a big problem. But now, the more I know, the more dangerous it looks. So let's dive into this. So the International Space Station has had leaks throughout its career. I mean, you have multiple modules joined together and all the seals are imperfect. You do expect a small, low rate of leakage through this. And the air is replenished by spacecraft that come up and they can deliver fluids, right? For example, the Progress spacecraft, they actually dock and they have plumbing in the docking adapter, which can deliver like water, oxygen, nitrogen, and of course, fuel for the station. Whereas on the US side, there's just like a docking hatch and you carry through cylinders of oxygen or bags of water or whatever to replenish the supplies. Either way, having a slow leak just meant that they had to increase the amount of stuff that was delivered. Now, in about 2019, there was an increase in the rate that was observed and that, someone at NASA began to notice this. And they began to see if there was some problem here. The leak began to get up to about 1 kilogram per day. Now, to be clear, 1 kilogram per day, even if there was no air being replenished and no, the atmosphere in the station would take a very, very, very long time to decay to a point where it was considered dangerous, right? But again, they had to deliver more stuff as a consequence. I never use AI to write scripts for my video. These are still very much handcrafted, human-generated explanations. But when Mammoth AI offered to sponsor this video, I thought it would be a fine test of it to have it right this spot. Mammoth is basically a way to access a whole range of AI models in one place. Things like Claude, ChatGPT, Gemini, Mistral, Perplexity, all under a single interface. And the interesting bit is that you can compare these directly. So instead of asking one model and hoping for the best, you can challenge them against each other, refine your prompts, and generally get better results, which is actually pretty useful when you're dealing with highly technical topics. For example, I tried asking different models about orbital mechanics edge cases and some of them were more confident than correct, but equally, some were able to dig into piles of poorly organized information on a subject and pull out those perfect nuggets of knowledge from my story. Which is exactly why having multiple models side by side is helpful. It also supports document and image analysis, PDFs, spreadsheets, that sort of thing, plus voice input if you prefer talking to typing. You can even set a default model, depending on what you're doing, which saves a bit of time. Pricing starts at about $10 a month with yearly billing, and that includes access to all the models plus features like custom Mammoth, Mammoth Code, and Mammoth API. They also emphasize privacy. There is no data retention, no training on your prompts, and full control over your history. So while I am not about to outsource a deep dive on rocket engines to AI, as a tool for deep research, comparison, and sanity checking concepts, AI has become useful, and Mammoth's access to multiple models and capabilities supports everything that I need to do with AI in one place. Try Mammoth AI now at mammoth.ai. And now back to the human written script. And so a lot of effort was expended looking for the leak. And initially, Roscosmos insisted that it had to be on the international section because, of course, Russia had all this amazing experience in space stations. They couldn't possibly do it. But guess what? By 2020, they had actually figured out that there was an air leak in a module on the Russian side of the station. And it wasn't just in a module. It's in a specific compartment of a specific module. So there's three main modules on there, right? You've got the Zarya, which was the space station core. You have Zvezda, which is a service module, and then they recently added Nauka, which is a larger module on the bottom. And the leak was found in the Zvezda module. And right at the very back of it, you have a smaller compartment at the front, and then a sort of larger main living compartment, and then you have this very small tunnel at the end. It's called a vestibule. Is another way. It's also known officially as the PRK module. And this is a small tunnel with a hatch at both ends that goes between the larger living area and the docking adapter that sits on the back of the station. Now, it needs to be narrow because the area around it is filled with equipment. They have rocket engines in there, batteries, things like your temperature control hardware that's needed for the rest of the station. The Zvezda module is part of the space station's attitude control and orbit boost capability. So it's kind of there, it's kind of really important. But also, your spacecraft would come in here and they would dock and they would unload through this vestibule. So it's that small vestibule, that's where the cracks were starting to be found. Now, as I said, there's equipment around that area, but it's still unpressurized. Now, they could very easily tell that this particular compartment was the problem because they could just close the hatches and then come back like a day later. And as they would open the hatch, they would feel pressure working. They would hear air running into the chamber and therefore they would know that the pressure had dropped. But actually locating the holes on the surface, that was a far more complicated process. They brought in thermal cameras, ultrasound systems, microphones that were supposed to hear the sound of the air running through, but it took an extraordinary amount of time. And apparently the thing that ultimately worked was they set a bunch of like fine tea leaves floating around. They literally read the tea leaves to find it. And they closed the module and then the next day they noticed the tea leaves had collected near a particular region. And upon closer inspection with a magnifying glass, they saw a thin hairline crack. And that was one of the sources. And so now the problem is, how do you repair the crack? And I know a lot of you are bringing up the flex tape meme, slap that on there, seal it up. I mean, sure, it seems really easy. You could just stick like some tape over it and it would stop the air leaking out. But the fact that a crack has formed means that it could potentially get worse, right? That section is undergoing stresses, right? There's motors in there, there's heat pumps that are creating vibration continuously. Every time a spacecraft docks, it causes like a shock. Every time the spacecraft fires the engines to raise the orbit, that is also going to translate vibrations through there. And those cracks, even if you covered them up, they would continue to grow. This is a big problem that you have in like aviation maintenance, and there's specific procedures for how you deal with a tiny hairline crack. So yeah, in the presence of these vibrations and these stresses, they will continue to get longer and longer. And then the risk is that they get to a large enough spot that the module fails more catastrophically. So I've actually been doing a course right now on aviation repair, right? I'm going for a light sport repairman certificate, but there's a very specific process for dealing with this, which is called stop drilling. What you do is if you have a long, thin crack, you find where the very tip of the crack is, and you drill through there with a wide drill bit, right? So, and the way this works is that if you think about it, the stresses that are being applied is kind of, it basically a function of the radius. The tighter the radius, the higher the stresses. Another way to think about it is if you think these are two sheets of metal, right? Or one sheet of metal, and there's a thin crack between my hands, right? And if it's a very narrow crack, say joined at where my knuckles are, as these things move, the stresses are all going through this one single point. Now, imagine I drill a big hole and that's my thumbs. And these things go up and down. Well, the stresses are being passed through a much wider distance through those thumbs. Therefore, the stresses are lower. Therefore, the crack is unlikely to get worse. So the standard procedure in finding cracks in like windshields, polycarbonate canopies, aluminium skins, you basically take a drill bit, you find the exact point and you drill very, very slowly, carefully. You don't want it to crack. And that will arrest the crack from growing further. Now, you can potentially then fill that crack in with epoxy or stuff. So drill stopping is a standard repair technique in aerospace. In fact, it's documented and required by the FAA's advisory circular, Acceptable Methods, Techniques and Practices, Aircraft Inspection and Repair. If you find a crack on the wing or the fuselage of an aircraft, you're probably going to use this technique to fix it. However, you're not going to do it while the plane is in flight. So this specific repair was actually carried out on Soyuz MS-17 or ISS Expedition 64. And I found a report that very specifically shows how they would be drilling through. They would have a very thin skin in this area. So it would only be about 2 millimeters thick. We're not sure exactly how thick it is. We know that they make this very light. They chemically mill the material after welding or before welding. And it's probably only about 2 millimeters of magnesium aluminium alloy. They used a 3 millimeter drill bit, like a standard cordless drill. that you might buy, you know, at your local hardware store, although it probably has an older battery. And to stop it going too deep, because guess what? There's rocket engines and fuel tanks on the other side of that. They would have a piece of insulating tape wrapped around it, 4 millimeters. So they would only drill in 4 millimeters just to the other side of this hull. And as soon as, of course, they pull that out, you start getting a bit more airflow. You probably could start hearing a whistle. You would do that on both sides, both ends of the crack. And then after that, they would, you know, take photos. They would then fill this in with an epoxy and then fill another layer. They had a multi-layer repair process with something called Germetal 1, I think. Germetal? I don't know. It gets transliterated poorly from many different sources. Regardless, this was like a type of epoxy resin. And that they did this for multiple cracks. You see, the cracks had been forming in multiple locations, and they think that it's a combination of the stresses from all these different impacts. And once the crack starts getting worse. So they made some fixes. The conditions got better, but they then would continue to get worse again. And in more recent months, well, the year before, they delayed the launch of Axiom 4 because they were going to perform more repairs, and they thought it would be pretty good bad idea to have a bunch of like amateur astronauts on the space station while there was potentially life-threatening repair being carried out, right? But they would eventually launch, and then a few weeks ago, apparently the decision was made that there were a number of cracks that needed to be fixed that were potentially hidden behind hardware that is on the interior of this transit tunnel. Now, there aren't many images of what this tunnel looks like. I've seen like an exterior of what it looked like when it was still in the factory. I've seen occasional glimpses. There's a few photos here and there, but there's no diagrams showing like what structural parts are in there. And so to get access to a specific region, it seems that the cosmonauts and the engineers on the ground came to a decision that they would actually need to physically saw through a bracket which was holding stuff to the wall. And there was then the question, is that bracket actually providing some strength to the tunnel? If you cut this bracket, will the tunnel fail, right? Will you transfer the stresses elsewhere and have a catastrophic failure, right? And nobody could determine that. And at this point, it sounds like the cosmonauts and Roscosmos have decided that they will not actually go any further on this, although this report does come from Eric Berger, who he's clearly dealing with NASA sources, talking to Roscosmos sources, and I can't guarantee that that is the actual decision or that is not going to change at some point in the future. But what I just want you to understand is that, yes, you do fix spacecraft by drilling holes into it, into the vacuum of space. That's what real cosmonauts do, right? The Zvezda module is one of the oldest part of the space station, but it predates the start of the space station. It was actually originally built as a structural spare for the Mir space station in the late 1980s. This is literally Soviet hardware, right? It was then going to be the core module for the Mir 2 station, and then, of course, the whole international deal turned it into the Russian segment of the International Space Station. And so this hardware is pretty old as it is, dating to the 80s, but on top of that, you know, the Mir space station, it only stayed in orbit something like 15 years. The International Space Station is now exceeding like 25 years. So this has had 10 years more history, and it's had a lot more visits. Another sign of its age is the fact that it was designed to use its engines to keep the space station boosted, because it was designed for a much smaller station, and because the ISS has lasted such a long time and is supposed to last even longer. The engines, they generally try to avoid using them now. They tend to instead have a Progress spacecraft docked on the back there and use its engines to boost the space station because they're worried about erosion and damage to those thrusters that are just well beyond the life, or at least maybe getting close to the life. Certainly they've exceeded the amount of lifetime use that the ones on the Mir space station ever had. So now, if the Russian segment closes this section off and never opens it again, that will leave them with three docking ports that they can actually move stuff through. They will still be able to use the port on the rear of the station, and they may indeed still have to, because I believe that's how they will have to dock Progress for station reboosts. Now, SpaceX and Northrop Grumman's Cygnus have both demonstrated the ability to reboost the station, so if that is considered sensitive, they may be able to stop doing that. Another important thing is if they close off this, right, the pressure will leak out slowly, and The thing is, having air pressure inside a pressure vessel adds to its structural integrity, even though that is also the thing that is trying to tear the thing apart. And right? So if you need a station reboost and you have to dock a Progress there and then fire its engines, you will probably have to repressurize this segment to make sure the design loads off on this particular section are consistent with what the thing has been designed for. So they won't be able to shut down the amount of air leaking from this forever. But that's a whole other side of things. Another interesting thing about Zvezda is it was launched from Baikonur on a Proton rocket, but this Proton rocket had an extra topping. Yes, it had an ad for Pizza Hut on the side. And so after it reached orbit and docked about a couple of years later, Pizza Hut famously, or whatever, they delivered pizza to the International Space Station, and that was part of an ad campaign. So yeah, pizza in space is a real thing. Pizza the Hut isn't just something from Spaceballs, right? So at this point, the International Space Station was slated to retire in 2030. There is definitely talk. Bills are supposed to extend its life to 2032. I'm not clear exactly where Russia is on this, whether they want to cut loose early or whether they want to maintain it while they prepare their own Russian orbital station. But regardless, this is one of the oldest parts of the station, and it seems that at this point we've essentially lost access to this. We don't go in anymore. It's haunted. I'm Scott Manley. Fly safe.